This is Audible.
Zonder Kids presents The Jesus Storybook Bible. Every story whispers his name. Written by Sally Lloyd-Jones and read by David Suchet. The Story and the Song. The heavens are singing about how great God is, and the skies are shouting it out. See what God has made! Day after day, night after night, they're speaking to us. God wrote, "I love you." He wrote it in the sky and on the earth and under the sea. He wrote his message everywhere, because God created everything in his world to reflect him like a mirror, to show us what he's like, to help us know him, to make our hearts sing. The way a kitten chases her tail, the way red poppies grow wild, the way a dolphin swims. And God put it into words too, and wrote it in a book called the Bible. Now, some people think the Bible is a book of rules, telling you what you should and what you shouldn't do. Well, the Bible certainly does have some rules in it. They show you how life works best. But the Bible isn't mainly about you and what you should be doing. It's about God and what he has done. Now, other people think the Bible is a book of heroes, showing you people you should copy. Well, the Bible does have some heroes in it, but as you'll soon find out, most of the people in the Bible aren't heroes at all. They make some big mistakes, and sometimes on purpose. They get afraid and run away. At times, they are downright mean. No, the Bible isn't a book of rules or a book of heroes. The Bible is, most of all, a story. It's an adventure story about a young hero who comes from a far country to win back his lost treasure. It's a love story about a brave prince who leaves his palace, his throne, everything to rescue the one he loves. It's like the most wonderful of fairy tales that has come true in real life. You see, the best thing about this story is it's true. There are lots of stories in the Bible, but all the stories are telling one big story. The story of how God loves his children and comes to rescue them. It takes the whole Bible to tell this story, and at the center of the story, there's a baby. Every story in the Bible whispers his name. He's like the missing piece in a puzzle, the piece that makes all the other pieces fit together, and suddenly you can see a beautiful picture. And this is no ordinary baby. This is the child upon whom everything would depend. This is the child who would one day be... But wait. Our story starts where all good stories start. Right at the very beginning. The beginning. A perfect home. In the beginning, there was nothing. Nothing to hear, nothing to feel, nothing to see. Only emptiness and darkness and nothing but nothing. But God was there, and God had a wonderful plan. "I'll take this emptiness," God said, "and I'll fill it up. Out of the darkness, I'm going to make light, and out of nothing, I'm going to make everything." Like a mummy bird flutters her wings over her eggs to help her babies hatch, God hovered over the deep, silent darkness. He was making life happen. God spoke. That's all. And whatever he said, it happened. God said, "Hello, light." And light shone into the darkness. God called the light day, and the darkness night. "You're good," God said. And they were. Then God said, "Hello, sea. Hello, sky." And a great space opened up, wide and deep and high. "You're good," God said. And they were. Then God said, "Hello, land." And there, splashing up through the oceans, came cliffs, mountains, sandy beaches. "You're good," God said. And they were. "Hello, trees," God said. "Hello, grass and flowers," and everything everywhere burst into life. He made buds bud, shoots shoot, flowers flower. "You're good," God said. And they were. "Hello, stars," God said. "Hello, sun. Hello, moon." And whizzing into the darkness came fiery globes, spinning around and around, whirling orange and purple and golden planets. "You're good," God said. And they were. "Hello, birds," God said. And with a fluttering and flapping and chirping and singing, birds filled the skies. "Hello, fish," God said. And with a darting and dashing and wriggling and splashing, fish filled the seas. "You're good," God said. And they were. Then God said, "Hello, animals." And everyone came out to play. The earth was filled with noisy noises, growling and gobbling and snapping and snorting and happy scuffling. "You're good," God said. And they were. God saw all that he had made, and he loved them. And they were lovely because he loved them. But God saved the best for last. From the beginning, God had a shining dream in his heart. He would make people to share his forever happiness. They would be his children, and the world would be their perfect home. So God breathed life into Adam and Eve. When they opened their eyes, the first thing they ever saw was God's face. And when God saw them, he was like a new dad. "You look like me," he said. "You're the most beautiful thing I've ever made." And God loved them with all his heart. And they were lovely because he loved them. And Adam and Eve joined in the song of the stars and the streams and the wind in the trees, the wonderful song of love to the one who made them. Their hearts were filled with happiness, and nothing ever made them sad or lonely or sick or afraid. God looked at everything he had made. "Perfect," he said. And it was. But all the stars and the mountains and oceans and galaxies and everything were nothing compared to how much God loved his children. He would move heaven and earth to be near them, always. Whatever happened, whatever it cost him, he would always love them. And so it was that the wonderful love story began. The Terrible Lie. Adam and Eve lived happily together in their beautiful new home, and everything was perfect for a while, until the day when everything went wrong. God had a horrible enemy. His name was Satan. Satan had once been the most beautiful angel, but he didn't want to be just an angel. He wanted to be God. He grew proud and evil and full of hate. And God had to send him out of heaven. And Satan was seething with anger and looking for a way to hurt God. He wanted to stop God's plan. Stop this love story right there. So he disguised himself as a snake and waited in the garden. Now, God had given Adam and Eve only one rule. Don't eat the fruit on that tree, God told them, because if you do, you'll think you know everything. You'll stop trusting me, and then death and sadness and tears will come. You see, God knew if they ate the fruit, they would think they didn't need him, and they would try to make themselves happy without him. But God knew there was no such thing as happiness without him, and life without him wouldn't be life at all. As soon as the snake saw his chance, he slithered silently up to Eve. "Does God really love you?" the serpent whispered. "If he does, why won't he let you eat the nice, juicy, delicious fruit? Poor you. Perhaps God doesn't want you to be happy." The snake's words hissed into her ears and sunk down deep into her heart like poison. "Does God love me?" Eve wondered. Suddenly she didn't know any more. "Just trust me," the serpent whispered. "You don't need God. One small taste. That's all. And you'll be happier than you could ever dream." Eve picked the fruit and ate some. And Adam ate some too. Well, a terrible lie came into the world. It would never leave. It would live on in every human heart, whispering to every one of God's children, "God doesn't love me." And it wasn't a dream. It was a nightmare. A dove flew from Adam's hand. A deer darted in a thicket. It was as if they were frightened by something. A chill was in the air. Something strange was happening. They had always been naked, but now they felt naked and wrong. And they didn't want anyone to see them. So they hid. Later that evening, as God was taking his walk, he called to them, "Children!" Usually, Adam and Eve loved to hear God's voice and would run to him. But this time, they ran away from him and hid in the shadows. "Where are you?" God called.
"Hiding,"
Adam said.
We're afraid of you."
"Oh, did you eat the fruit I told you not to eat?" God asked them. Adam said, "Eve made me do it." "What have you done?" God asked. Eve said, "The serpent made me do it." And terrible pain came into God's heart. His children hadn't just broken the one rule. They had broken God's heart. They had broken their wonderful relationship with him. And now he knew everything else would break. God's creation would start to unravel and come undone and go wrong. From now on, everything would die, even though it was all supposed to last forever. You see, sin had come into God's perfect world, and it would never leave. God's children would be always running away from him and hiding in the dark. Their hearts would break now and never work properly again. God couldn't let his children live forever, not in such pain, not without him. There was only one way to protect them. "You will have to leave the garden now," God told his children, his eyes filling with tears. "This is no longer your true home. It's not the place for you anymore." But before they left the garden, God made clothes for his children to cover them. He gently clothed them, and then he sent them away on a long, long journey, out of the garden, out of their home. Well, in another story, it would all be over, and that would have been the end. But not in this story. God loved his children too much to let the story end there. Even though he knew he would suffer, God had a plan, a magnificent dream. One day he would get his children back. One day he would make the world their perfect home again. And one day he would wipe away every tear from their eyes. You see, no matter what, in spite of everything, God would love his children with a never-stopping, never-giving-up, unbreaking, always and forever love. And though they would forget him and run from him, deep in their hearts, God's children would miss him always and long for him. Lost children yearning for their home. Before they left the garden, God whispered a promise to Adam and Eve. "It will not always be so. I will come to rescue you, and when I do, I'm going to do battle against the snake. I'll get rid of the sin and the dark and the sadness you let in here. I'm coming back for you." And he would. One day, God himself would come. A new beginning. Time passed and many people filled the earth. Everyone everywhere had forgotten about God and were only doing bad things all the time. God's heart was filled with pain when he saw what had happened to the world he loved. Everywhere was disease and death and destruction, all the things God hates most. Now, Noah was God's friend, which was odd in those days because no one else was. But Noah listened to God. He talked to God. He just loved being with God, like you do with your best friend. "Noah," God said, "things have gone wrong. People have filled my world with hate instead of love. They're destroying themselves and each other and my world, and I must stop them. First, we'll build an ark." Do you know how to build an ark? Neither did Noah. Luckily, God knew, and he would show him. "A storm is coming," God told Noah, "but I will rescue you, I promise. I'll send the animals to you, ones that creep and crawl and slither and slime and gallop and hop and bound and climb. And don't forget to pack everyone's food." The storm was going to wash away all the hate and sadness and everything that had gone wrong and make the world clean again. God had thought up a way to keep Noah safe. But Noah would have to trust God and do exactly what God told him. So Noah built an ark. That's short for a very large boat. Noah's neighbours came out to watch and point and laugh because they didn't believe Noah about the boat or the storm or needing to be rescued. And Noah must have looked rather silly. His boat was in the desert. The desert was nowhere near the sea, and there wasn't even a cloud in the sky. Why would anyone need an umbrella, let alone a boat? But Noah didn't mind so much what other people thought. He minded what God thought. So he just did what God told him to do. When the ark was ready, God said, "All aboard!" And Noah's family and all the animals climbed inside. Then God shut the door. And it started raining. For minutes that joined up into hours, that joined up into days, that joined up into weeks and weeks. And the rain joined up into puddles, that joined up into rivers, that joined up into lakes, that joined up into a flood that covered the whole world. Their boat, that had once seemed so big, suddenly seemed very small. But in the middle of the huge storm, in the crashing waves, in all the thunder and lightning, and through it all, God was with them. And God kept them safe for 40 long days and 40 long nights. Finally, the rain stopped. The sun came out, and Noah threw open all the windows. "Hooray!" everyone shouted. Noah sent his dove out to explore, and it wasn't long before she brought him back a fresh olive leaf. Now, everyone knew exactly what that meant. She had found a tree and land. The water was going down. At last, the boat landed quite suddenly on top of a great mountain. As soon as it was safe, God said, "Out you come!" And so they did, everyone skipping and dancing onto dry land. The first thing Noah did was to thank God for rescuing them, just as he had promised. And the first thing God did was make another promise. "I won't ever destroy the world again." And like a warrior who puts away his bow and arrow at the end of a great battle, God said, "See, I have hung up my bow in the clouds." And there, in the clouds, just where the storm meets the sun, was a beautiful bow made of light. A rainbow. It was a new beginning in God's world. It wasn't long before everything went wrong again. But God wasn't surprised. He knew this would happen. That's why, before the beginning of time, he had another plan. A better plan. A plan not to destroy the world, but to rescue it. A plan to one day send his own son, the rescuer. God's strong anger against hate and sadness and death would come down once more, but not on his people or his world. No, God's war bow was not pointing down at his people. It was pointing up into the heart of heaven. A giant staircase to heaven. Noah and his family lived in the land, and his children had children. And those children had more children. And then those children had even more. Well, you get the picture. Until there were lots of people on the earth once more. Now, back then, everyone spoke exactly the same language, so you didn't need to learn Swahili or Japanese or anything, because you could say hello to anyone and they knew what you meant. One day, everyone was talking and they came up with an idea. "Let's build ourselves a beautiful city to live in. It can be our home and we'll be safe forever." Oh, then they had another idea. "And let's build a really tall tower to reach up to heaven." "Yes," they said. "We'll say, 'Look at us up here.' And everyone will look up at us, and we'll look down on them, and then we'll know we are something. We'll be like God. We'll be famous and safe and happy, and everything will be all right." So they got to work. Brick by brick, the tower grew higher and higher until it soared above the city, touching the sky. They built stairs in the tower to climb to the top. It was like a giant staircase to heaven. Look, they cheered. We're the ones. See what we can do with our very own hands. They were quite pleased with themselves. But God wasn't pleased with them. God could see what they were doing. They were trying to live without him. But God knew that wouldn't make them happy or safe or anything. If they kept on like this, they would only destroy themselves. And God loved them too much to let that happen. So he stopped their plans. One morning, they went to work as usual, but everything was different. Their words were all new and funny. You see, God had given each person a completely different language. Suddenly, no one understood what anyone else was saying. Someone would say, "How do you do?" And the other person thought they said, "How ugly are you?" It wasn't funny. You could be saying something nice like, "Such a lovely morning," and get a punch in the nose because they thought you said, "Hush up, you're boring." You couldn't even say, "Pardon," to check if you heard right, because no one understood that word either. It wasn't easy to work together after that, as you can only imagine. People were always quarrelling and fighting and getting in a dreadful muddle and becoming grumpier and grumpier until at last they were all too cross to keep on building and just had to stop. After that, people scattered all over the world, which is how we ended up with so many different languages to this day. You see, God knew however high they reached, however hard they tried, people could never get back to heaven by themselves. People didn't need a staircase. They needed a rescuer. Because the way back to heaven wasn't a staircase. It was a person. People could never reach up to heaven. So heaven would have to come down to them. And one day it would. Son of Laughter. Years passed, and things didn't get any better. People were still just as cruel and mean to one another. They still got sick and died. God's world was still full of tears. It was never meant to be like this. But God was getting ready to do something about it. He was going to make all the wrong things right, and he was going to do it through a family. "Abraham," God said, "how many stars are there?" God was about to tell his friend a wonderful secret.
Let me see,
Abraham said, rolling up his sleeves. "But have you ever tried counting stars? Then you know how hard it is."
993, 994, 997.
Well, of course, he kept losing count.
"Too many,"
he said. "Guess what?" God laughed. "I will give you so many children and grandchildren and great-grandchildren, you won't be able to count them either." Abraham couldn't help giggling at such a wonderful idea, but he stopped himself. How could he have a family? Don't be silly. He didn't have any children, let alone grandchildren. He wiped away a tear. Anyway, it was far too late for him to start having babies at his age. He was 99 years old. What could God mean? "Abraham," God said, "believe me." And then God told Abraham his secret rescue plan. "Abraham, I will make your family very big," God promised, "until one day your family will come to number more than even all the stars in the sky." Abraham looked up at the dark night sky, thick with stars. "You will be my special family, my people, and through you everyone on earth will be blessed." It was an incredible promise. God was going to rescue the world through Abraham's family. One of his great-great-great-grandchildren would be the child, the promised one, the rescuer.
"Oh, but it's too wonderful," Abraham said. "How can it be true?"
Is anything too good to be true? God asked. Is anything too wonderful for me? So Abraham trusted what God said, more than what his eyes could see, and he believed. Now when Abraham's wife Sarah heard God's promise, she just laughed to herself. But it wasn't a happy laugh. It had tears in it. She'd always wanted a baby. Could her dream come true? Could she really have a baby when she was 90 years old? No, of course not. Don't be silly. It was far too late. Sarah didn't believe God could do what he promised. She had forgotten that when God says something, it's as good as done. Of course it was as easy for God to give her a baby son as it was for him to make all the stars in the sky. And sure enough, 9 months later, just as God had promised, Sarah gave birth to a baby boy. They named him Isaac, which means son of laughter. And Sarah laughed. But this time it was a glorious, happy laugh. Her dream had come true. God would do as he promised. He would always look after Abraham's family, his special people. And one day, God would send another baby. A baby promised to a girl who didn't even have a husband. But this baby would bring laughter to the whole world. This baby would be everyone's dream come true. The present. God knew that his secret rescue plan could only work if Abraham trusted him completely. God had to make sure Abraham would do whatever he asked. So a few years later, God asked Abraham to give him a present. Now, Abraham liked giving presents to God. He gave God his animals. They were called sacrifices, and they were a way to say, I love you, to God. But this time, God didn't want a lamb or a goat. God wanted Abraham to give him something more, much more. He wanted Abraham to give him his son, his only son, the son he loved, Isaac. Put this boy on the altar and kill him as the sacrifice? How could God want him to do such a terrible thing? Abraham didn't understand, but he knew that God was his father who loved him, and so Abraham trusted him. Early the next morning, Abraham and Isaac set off. They climbed the steep, stony trail up the mountain. Isaac carried the wood on his back. His father carried the knife and the coals. Papa, Isaac said, we have everything except we forgot the lamb for the sacrifice. God will give us the lamb, son, Abraham said. They built an altar and laid the wood on top. Abraham asked his son to climb on top of the wood. Isaac didn't understand, but he knew his father loved him, and so he trusted him. He climbed up onto the altar, and Abraham tied his boy to the wood. Isaac didn't struggle or try to run away. He just lay there quietly and didn't make a sound. Everything was ready. Abraham took the knife. Tears were filling up his eyes. Pain was filling up his heart. His hand was shaking. He lifted the knife high into the air. Stop! God said. Don't hurt the boy. I want him to live and not die. I know now that you love me because you would have given me your only son. Well, Abraham felt his heart leap with joy. He unbound Isaac and folded him in his arms. Great sobs shook the old man's whole body. Scalding tears filled his eyes. For a long time, They stayed there like that, in each other's arms, the boy and his dad. Suddenly, Abraham saw a ram caught in some brambles. The sacrifice! God had given them what they needed just in time. The ram would die so Isaac didn't have to. And so Abraham sacrificed the ram instead of his son. And as they sat there on the mountaintop, watching the embers of the fire die in the cool night air, the stars above them sparkling in the velvet sky, God helped Abraham and Isaac understand something. God wanted his people to live, not die. God wanted to rescue his people, not punish them. But they must trust him. One day, someone will be born into your family, God promised them, and he will bring happiness to the whole world. God was getting ready to give the whole world a wonderful present. It would be God's way to tell his people, I love you. Many years later, another son would climb another hill, carrying wood on his back. Like Isaac, he would trust his father and do what his father asked. He wouldn't struggle or run away. Who was he? God's son. His only son. The son he loved. The Lamb of God. The girl no one wanted. There were once two sisters. The youngest sister was very beautiful, and her name was Rachel. But the oldest sister wasn't beautiful at all. Some thought her quite ugly. And her name was Leah. Rachel was the kind of girl who always gets invited to parties and chosen for the team. Everyone loved her. And poor Leah? No one hardly even noticed her. One day, their cousin Jacob came to stay. He was one of Isaac's sons, and he was on the run. Jacob had stolen and cheated and made some enemies, including his own brother, and now he was hiding. The funny thing is, Jacob, of all people, was the one God gave the special promise to, the same promise he had given to his grandfather Abraham. I will rescue the world through your family. But then God chooses people we least expect, as we'll see. Jacob stayed a long time working for his uncle, Laban. And one day, Laban said, Jacob, I've decided to pay you for your work. What do you want? A sudden thought struck him. How about one of my daughters? Jacob looked at Rachel, and he looked at Leah. Who would he choose? Of course he chose Rachel. I'll work 7 years for free, Jacob said, if I can marry Rachel. So Jacob worked 7 years, and at last his wedding day arrived. But that night, Laban played a nasty trick on Jacob. Instead of sending Rachel to marry Jacob, he sent Leah. Now, in those days they didn't have electricity, so it was dark in their tent, and besides, women wore veils, and you couldn't see their faces properly. So Jacob suspected nothing. The next morning, Jacob woke up and screamed. His new wife was lying beside him, but it wasn't Rachel, it was Leah. Jacob jumped out of bed. Laban, he cried, you scoundrel! But Laban said, work for me another 7 years, and then you can marry Rachel. So Jacob worked for Laban another 7 years, and at last Rachel became his wife. Now Jacob had two wives, but of his two wives, Jacob loved Rachel the best. No one loves me, Leah said. I'm too ugly. But God didn't think she was ugly. And when he saw that Leah was not loved, and that no one wanted her, God chose her to love her specially, to give her a very important job. One day, God was going to rescue the whole world through Leah's family. Now, when Leah knew that God loved her, in her heart, suddenly it didn't matter anymore whether her husband loved her the best or if she was the prettiest. Someone had chosen her. Someone did love her. With a never-stopping, never-giving-up, unbreaking, always and forever love. So when Leah had a baby boy, she called him Judah, which means, "This time I will praise the Lord." And that's just what she did. And you'll never guess what job God gave Leah. You see, when God looked at Leah, he saw a princess. And sure enough, that's exactly what she became. One of Leah's children's children's children would be a prince, the Prince of Heaven, God's son. This prince would love God's people. They wouldn't need to be beautiful for him to love them. He would love them with all of his heart, and they would be beautiful because he loved them. Like Leah. The Forgiving Prince. Jacob had 12 sons, but of all his sons, Joseph was his favourite. One day, Jacob gave Joseph a splendid new robe. It was beautiful and rich, with all the colours of the rainbow. But it made Joseph's brothers jealous. They wanted rich rainbow robes too. Then, to make matters worse, Joseph kept on having these special dreams. "I dreamed I was the greatest. I was king," Joseph told his brothers, "and you all bowed down to me." Now, I'm sure you know, even if Joseph didn't, that telling your brothers things like that isn't a very good idea. So Joseph's brothers hated him even more. They wanted to kill Joseph and his dreams. And one day, that's exactly what they tried to do. They tore Joseph's rainbow robe off him and sold him to slave traders for 20 pieces of silver. The traders took Joseph to Egypt and made him into a slave. The brothers went home and lied to their father, telling him that Joseph was dead. "Ah, that's the end of that dreamer," they thought. But they were wrong. God had a magnificent dream for Joseph's life, and even when it looked like everything had gone wrong, God would use it all to help make the dream come true. God would use everything that was happening to Joseph to do something good. Meanwhile, though, things were not looking good for Joseph in Egypt. He was far from home and from his dad. Then he got blamed for something he didn't do. And even though he had done nothing wrong, he was punished and thrown in jail. But God had not left Joseph. One night, Pharaoh, king of Egypt, had a scary dream about thin cows gobbling up fat cows. What on earth did it mean? He didn't know. But Joseph was a dream expert, so Pharaoh sent for him. "It means a famine is coming," Joseph explained. "There won't be enough food." Pharaoh was so pleased by Joseph's skill that he immediately took Joseph out of jail and made him a prince. Now, back home, Joseph's brothers had run out of food and everyone was hungry. God's special family was in danger. If they didn't get food soon, they would starve to death. So Joseph's brothers travelled to Egypt to buy food. They came and knelt before the new prince. His brothers didn't know that the prince was Joseph. But Joseph knew who they were. Joseph's dream, the one about his brothers bowing down to him, was coming true. "It's me," Joseph cried. But when they saw it was Joseph, his brothers were afraid. They had wronged Joseph. They had sinned and they knew it. And now Joseph would certainly punish them. But Joseph looked at his brothers, and his eyes filled with tears. Even though his brothers had hurt him and hated him and wanted him dead, in spite of everything, he couldn't stop loving them. his heart, which they had broken, filled up with love, and Joseph forgave them. Joseph threw his arms around them. "Don't be afraid," he said. "Behind what you were doing, underneath everything that was happening, God was doing something good. God was making everything right again." Joseph didn't punish them. He rescued them. He brought God's special family to live safely with him in Egypt. One day, God would send another prince, a young prince whose heart would break. Like Joseph, he would leave his home and his father. His brothers would hate him and want him dead. He would be sold for pieces of silver. He would be punished even though he had done nothing wrong. But God would use everything that happened to this young prince, even the bad things, to do something good, to forgive the sins of the whole world. God to the rescue. Joseph and his brothers grew old and died, but their children's children stayed on in Egypt, where they became a very large family. Later on, a new king began to rule. But this pharaoh didn't remember Joseph, and he didn't like God's people. He made them into his slaves and beat them and made them work harder and harder. God's people cried out to God to rescue them, and God heard them. He remembered his promise to Abraham. He would look after his people. He would find a way to set them free. One day, Moses was looking after sheep when something caught his eye. A bush was behaving very oddly. It was flickering with flames, but its leaves weren't burning up. He took a closer look.
"Moses!"
boomed a big voice. Moses leapt back. Well, the bush was talking to him. "I have heard my people's cries," God said. "I have seen their tears. So I have come down to rescue them. Go to Pharaoh and tell him to let my people go free." Moses was afraid, but God said, "I will be with you." So Moses went to Pharaoh. "Pharaoh," Moses began. "God says..."
"God?" said Pharaoh. "Never heard of him."
Moses kept going. "God says, let his people go free."
"Why should I?" Pharaoh said. "Don't want to, won't."
So he didn't. So God gave Pharaoh 10 warnings called plagues. First, God turned the River Nile into blood. No one could drink the water. But still, Pharaoh would not let them go. So God made frogs come hopping and leaping and jumping. In your bed frogs, in your hair frogs, in your soup frogs, all over everywhere frogs.
"Make them go away," Pharaoh screamed. "Then your people can go."
So God took the frogs away. But Pharaoh changed his mind.
"You can't go," he said.
Then God sent zillions of gnats. But still, Pharaoh said, "No." So then God sent swarms of flies. Flies buzzing in your eyes, flies. And after that, sickness. And horrible boils. And huge hailstones. And a storm of locusts. Then darkness when it should have been day, until it seemed that the whole world, creation, everything was coming undone, falling back into darkness and emptiness and nothingness. But each time Pharaoh said, "Make it stop and then I'll let them go." And each time when God made it stop, Pharaoh changed his mind and said, "Actually, no, you can't go." Well, finally, Moses warned Pharaoh, "Obey God, or he will have to send the worst thing of all." And Pharaoh just laughed. So God said, "The oldest boy in each family of Egypt must die, but my people will be safe." God told his people to take their best lamb, to kill it, and to put some of its blood on their front doors. "When God passes over your house," Moses explained, "God will see the blood and know that the lamb died instead of you." That night, it was just as God had said. Suddenly, piercing the darkness, echoing down the corridors of the palace, came a blood-curdling scream. Pharaoh's oldest son had died. At last, Pharaoh did what God said.